speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Wednesday, March the 4th, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host, and we are here the day after Super Tuesday. We had 38% of the delegates on the Democrat side awarded yesterday. And, of course, there really isn't any primary in the Republican side. There's only one challenger, and nobody's voting for him. I think he's got like 1% of the vote or something like that. Again, William Weld, the ultra-liberal rhino, who was governor at one point in time. He was vice presidential candidate for the for Gary Johnson, Libertarian Party candidate 4 years ago. The guy who didn't know where Aleppo was. He picked this guy to be his vice president. But we're going to take a look at the news today. We have a couple of guests I think you're going to find interesting. We have Alex Newman is going to be joining us. We're going to talk about what is going on in the schools, because it's not only the kind of sexualization that we're seeing now, pushing state after state, jurisdiction after jurisdiction. They're pushing transgender education on kids in kindergarten. They're handing out stickers to kids 4 years old saying future drag queen for them to wear. I mean, this is disgusting, but it doesn't stop there. They're pushing to find out information about your family. So, they are attacking your kids. They're attacking your family. They're attacking all of this. And we're going to talk to him also about some other issues in terms of the Constitution convention that they keep trying to sell. We have conservatives like Jim DeMint who continue to push that. And that's something that the John Birch Society and the New American, Alex Newman, cover quite a bit. We're also going to have Del Bigtree on. And we're going to talk about what's going on with coronavirus vaccines. You need to be very concerned about this. I'm far more concerned about the coronavirus vaccine than I am about the coronavirus itself. And I'm also concerned about quarantine. And both of these are now really starting to escalate. And as a result of the economic fallout, which is also very real, something else that you should be concerned about. Look, I still have not made up my mind about how serious this is, because I cannot get any reliable information from any of these governments. Nobody is telling us the truth. So as we look at the number of cases, even as they're trying to push this to a large extent, you know, as I've reported, compare this to what happened with the swine flu, the H1N1. People were panicking about that. They eventually declared it a pandemic, a national, you know, an international emergency and so forth. But that was 6 months after the fact. The Obama administration and the mainstream media did everything they could to tamp that down. They even did everything they could to tamp down Ebola being brought here to the United States, even though we knew that it had a fatality rate of 60 to 70%. Now we have we have one spokesperson in the Trump administration, or actually the left-behind bureaucracy, health bureaucracy, saying, well, you know, even if it's only 1 or 2%, even if it's 1%, that's 10 times what we're seeing with flu. Because according to their numbers, you have flu deaths that are approximately 1%. I mean, they're all over the place. Like I said, they estimate, and they don't know. CDC doesn't know even about the common flu. But they estimate tens of millions of flu cases, and they talk about the number of deaths being somewhere between 18 and 40,000. Well, you know, pick the average there, 26,000. And that's where you get about just under 1%. But we don't really know about that. But we do know about the economic effects. And we should be worried about quarantine. And we should be worried about mandated vaccines. And that's what people are starting to talk about now. So we're going to talk to Del Bigtree about those issues coming up in the program as well. We'll be right back with results from Super Tuesday. Or was it Thursday? We got to ask Joe. I don't know. We'll be right back.
Deceit. telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Wednesday, March the 4th, year of our Lord, 2020. Yes, I will say that Joe Biden does not want to say God or Creator when he talks about the Declaration of Independence. He stopped himself. I played that clip yesterday, and headlines, even from places like WND, said, well, you know, he forgets the Declaration of Independence. And I played that, and I said, well, you know, I don't know that he is trying to not say that, if he forgot the Declaration of Independence, or if he's trying not to say God or Creator. Because, you know, he said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal by God. And he starts to say, God, you hear that? We're going to play it for you later. And he goes, the thing. They're created equal by the thing. And I said, you know, it's very troubling because does he mean that we're created equal because the thing, the Declaration of Independence, says so? Or because God Almighty says so? No. I think it was the latter. I think he doesn't want to say God. Because, you know, that's kind of not very helpful in the Democrat Party, especially if you want to win some elections. You got to check yourself on that. That might have been a rare moment of mental clarity on the part of the new leader of the Dementia Party. Because that's what he has now become in the wake of Super Tuesday. We'll be talking about that in a second. Before we do, real quickly, I'm going to have today as guests, I'm going to have Del Bigtree. We're going to be talking about vaccines because I'm very concerned about the coronavirus vaccine. I'm concerned about quarantine. And I'm also concerned about the economy. And so is President Trump and the Federal Reserve. They've now cut interest rates by a half point. Now, this is very unusual. Because the Federal Reserve typically has been moving interest rates for the last several years in a quarter of a point increments. So this is twice as much as they typically move it up or down. And considering how low interest rates are already, it's even more significant to take a half a point off of it. President Trump immediately yesterday, as they did that, he said, tweeted out that it wasn't enough shortly after the rate cut was announced. He said, the Federal Reserve is cutting, but it must further ease and, most importantly, come into line with other countries and competitors. We're not playing on a level field. Not fair to the USA. It's finally time for the Federal Reserve to lead more easing and cutting. So this is, again, where are they going to go? Negative? Yes, that is going to be going negative. And that's going to happen before too much long. Longer. And as we're looking at outright theft, we have some negative buying, I guess you could say. You know, you have negative interest rates. That's where you pay the bank money to put your money in the bank. They don't pay you money. I mean, it's microscopic what they pay us in deposits now, but they'll start with the larger depositors. They'll start having the larger depositors pay them for the privilege of putting their money in the bank. As they continue to charge usury rates, you know, this is the thing. If you want to do something to stimulate the economy, President Trump, maybe you ought to pick up some points with the general people and reenact the usury laws. I know that wouldn't be very popular with Goldman Sachs and the banking community, and it's very dangerous to offend them. But I remember when there was a usury law that prevented banks from charging people more than 10% interest. That went away once we had stagflation in the late 70s. And I remember the first home loan that I had was about 14%. I was dumb enough to take out a home loan like that right after I got out of college. So, you know, they removed the usury rates, but it used to be that there was only a couple of points spread between what the banks would pay you for your money that was put on deposit and what they would charge you. And once they took away the usury rates and once they got inflation back under control, now what do we see? We see that you put your money on deposit in the bank and you might get a tiny fraction of a percent, but they're charging you on any credit card interest They're charging you 15, 25, 30%. If you get behind, some of these credit cards will charge you close to 50% interest. I mean, we're talking about loan sharking here. That was something that only the mafia used to do because there used to be constraints on the banks. Now there are no constraints on the bank. So they're acting as outright thieves. But quite literally, you can see this happening in Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco. Her district there, San Francisco, and I've reported on this before, how the Democrats in San Francisco have said that if you steal up to $950, you can steal up to $950, and it's not going to be a crime. It'll be a misdemeanor, and the cops won't do anything about it. Take a look at this video that we're playing right now here. Play a little bit of this because you can hear the people screaming at them in the store as they take the picture. And these are people that got black hoods on. I don't know why. I mean, it's no big deal, right? The cops aren't going to do anything. And they're just going into this store, and they are just, they got bags, and they're just taking whatever they want and walking out. Look at that. Look at that. And they're saying, call the police, call the police. Why? Police aren't going to do anything. And if they were to, they had some security guard, was a big guy, and he physically tried to stop them. Oh, that would be a crime that the Democrats in San Francisco would prosecute, because then you would be guilty of assault and battery. Absolutely amazing. And they can go in, take up to $950, go out, and I reported on this a month ago. They can go out and turn this over to their partners outside and then go back in and do it again. Because each trip, you get a free $1,000 trip. It's like some kind of a game show, the Democrat game show there in San Francisco. This is what these people want to do across the country. Donna Brazile, the one who was channeling questions to Hillary Clinton when she was working at CNN, channeling questions to Hillary Clinton on the upcoming debates. She is now a commentator on Fox, and she lost it yesterday as you had the GOP chairwoman, Rona McDaniel, talking about the election. She didn't want any Republicans commenting on their election. Let's play that clip, video clip number four.
It's potentially a broker convention, which will be rigged against Bernie if those superdelegates have their way on that second vote.
To that, you say what, Donna?
First of all, I want to talk to my Republicans. First of all, stay the hell out of our race. Stay the hell out of our race.
I think she's maybe not too happy about the results.
And Sandra, of listening to Republicans tell me and the Democrats about our process. First of all, they don't have a process. They're canceling
primaries. You don't even talk about this.
They have winner take all. They don't have the kind of democracy that we see on the Democratic side.
Maybe you didn't notice that.
And for people to use Russian talking points to sow division among Americans, that is
Russian
stupid.
Talking
so
points.
Rona,
who did that, Donna?
Go to hell. This Whoa. Is not about no. Go to hell. I'm tired of it, Ed. We're not trying to prevent anyone from becoming the nominee. If you have the delegates and win, you will win. This notion that somehow or another Democrats are out there trying to put hurdles or roadblocks before one candidate, that's stupid. I know what's going
on.
They
ain't doing that.
They're
in the last election, did she?
Of Democrats coming together to defeat Donald Trump. They need to be focusing on what we're focusing on, the Democratic
all right,
Party.
Let's hold it right
and
there.
Preventing-
and let's just remind you all that, you know, in terms of somebody having their thumb on the scale, it was Donna Brazile who was helping Hillary Clinton channeling questions to her while she was there at CNN. And, of course, it wasn't just that. You go back to September 2015. A year before the election, here's the memo provided by Donna Brazile on Hillary for America teaming up with the DNC to secure the nomination in 2015. This is intended to memorialize our agreement. And see, you can see that Hillary is going to transfer $1.2 million to the DNC that was deeply in debt at the time. And she was able to get superdelegates. She was able to get the support of Donna Brazile, who was chair of the DNC at that point in time. When she left there and went to CNN, she's able to give her. But, you know, they weren't working to undermine Bernie, and they're not doing that today either. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I got the horse right here. The name is Paul Revere. And here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do.
this.
All right, so let's take a look at the latest horse race. So we should, I guess, call it the mule race because we had the Democrat primary yesterday. And Super Tuesday, 38% of the votes released. And, of course, the big winner is Biden. And we have Bloomberg coming out as a, I think, the biggest loser. We talked about it the other day, the other billionaire in the race, Tom Steyer, who spent $250 million of his billions, this banker, Steyer. And he spent about $3,500 per vote because he didn't get any delegates. And so you look at the small number of votes that he got. He spent a great deal of money in South Carolina. And after that, he bowed out because that was going to be his best shot. Well, yesterday was going to be Bloomberg's best shot. He had not participated in any of the primaries prior to this. He'd not been on the ballot. The primaries and the caucuses. And, of course, he participated, unfortunately for him, in two debates. And that was not set up. You heard all these people saying, well, look at this. They're trying to help Bloomberg, putting him in the debate. And I said at the time, this is not going to help him be in the debate. He does not want to be in the debate. They're changing the rules to essentially call his bluff. He was saying, I don't qualify for the debates. I would love to, but I'm not taking any money from anybody. So that's one of the qualifications is, you know, how many contributors you've got, not just your standing in the polls. And so I would love to participate in the debates, but I can't because they have their, well, they changed the rules and called his bluff. Because he wanted to campaign just with slick, prepared TV ads. And it didn't work out too well for him. He spent more than $500 million. And he got 1.5 million votes. So it works out about $333 per vote. Now, that's better than Tom Steyer, but it's still not a very good return on investment, is it, Mike? $333 per vote. That's really, really bad. Not as bad as $3,500 a Steyer, but he did get some delegates, except there it looks even worse. Bloomberg now has 18 delegates after Super Tuesday. And that's what he was focusing his $500 million on. And after Super Tuesday, getting 18 delegates but spending $500 million, because that's really where it comes down, he spent $27.8 million per delegate. That's looking really bad. You know, Hillary did much better than that. As I was saying before we went to break, you know, you have the memo there with Donna Brazile talking about how, hey, Hillary's got a victory fund here. We're going to make sure we clear the way for her. $1.2 million into the DNC, and she gets all the superdelegates. What did Bloomberg get? He spent $27.8 million and got 18 delegates. That's not too super, is it? So he is now reevaluating, and he should be, if he's got, he should have been reevaluating his staff after they thought that it would be good optics for him to go to a black church in Selma, Alabama on Bloody Sunday after his record of stop and frisk. I saw the people standing up with their back to him the entire time he was speaking. Just the arrogance of this guy. Just how numb he is to the general public and liberty in general. So as it stands right now, you got Biden way out in front with about 450 delegates, Sanders at 370, and they're about a third of the way through. Bloomberg with 18. Warren is the other one. She's got 39 delegates because she participated in some of the other ones, but it didn't look too good for her either because she didn't win anywhere. And even in her own home state of Massachusetts, she came in third behind Biden and Sanders, a distant third. Biden had 34%. Sanders had 27%, and she had 21%. Now, she was able to beat Bloomberg, who had 12%. Good for her. Good for her. Well, you know, everybody else saw this coming and bailed within the previous 48 hours. Klobuchar could see that this was happening. And I said that on Monday before they got out. I said, look at this. I said, it's looking like Klobuchar and Warren aren't going to be able to carry their own home states. And Klobuchar had the good sense to get out. I had the grace to get out and to start cutting a deal. That's what one of the people commented about. They said, looks like they've been reading Art of the Deal. So they wanted to cut a deal with Biden and with the Democrat establishment to ingratiate themselves. Elizabeth Warren doesn't have that kind of grace. Nobody ever accused Elizabeth Warren of having either good judgment, good sense, or grace, and she certainly proved it again this week. She is, reports, rumors are that she is also evaluating. She should be. Bloomberg, after the Super Tuesday results, flew back from Florida, where he had been campaigning and where he had already spent millions of dollars for future primaries. But he flew back to reevaluate and reassess what he's doing. Comey, meanwhile, has endorsed Biden. Kind of a little bit late getting on there on the bandwagon, but, you know, hey, it's James Comey. And it was interesting because Andrew Bates is with the Biden campaign. He is the director of rapid response. And as I pointed out, he very rapidly came out and said, he responded to the tweet from James Comey talking about how we all got to get on the bandwagon for Joe Biden and so forth. I just voted for him. And he said, customer service, I just received a package that I very much did not order. How can I return it free of charge? That's the way he responded to Comey's endorsement on Twitter. I just got a package that I don't want to have. Well, you know, as I said yesterday, we've got to start taking a close look at the dementia party now. I guess we should call it that. Because if you look at the top three guys, their average age is, I tweeted it out, something like 77.7 years. Bloomberg, Biden, and Bernie, 77.7 years. And, of course, they decided to go with the one superannuated candidate who has the signs of dementia, and that's Joe Biden. So if you throw in Elizabeth Warren, that takes it down a little bit. She's in her 70s as well. Takes it down a little bit to about, you know, 75 and a half years or whatever. But, you know, yesterday when we talked about Joe Biden saying, you know, the thing, when he wanted to talk about all, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men and women, you got that women in there because, you know, it wouldn't be politically correct to just talk about, you know, use the generic sense of mankind. And he said, we're created by God. And he goes, you know, the thing, stopped himself. When you listen to this closely, I think he was about to say God, and he checked himself in a rare moment of mental clarity. Video clip number 10.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the thing.
Right? Yeah. You know the thing. I don't think the thing was Declaration of Independence. I think the thing was God, and they pretty much have purged God out of the Democrat Party. You remember back in 2012? You couldn't find the word God anywhere in the Democrat Party platform. They purged it back in 2012, the word God. And then when you go back to March 11th of last year, Nancy Pelosi's Democrats in the House removed So Help Me God from the oath that you take when you're giving testimony. They hate God, this anti-God party. And when we come back, we'll talk about Joe Biden saying he wants to sign the executive order the very first day to force Americans to pay for abortions to Planned Parenthood.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Before we went to the break, I was talking about the rally a couple of days ago where Biden was quoting the Declaration of Independence and abruptly stopped. Some people took that to mean that he had a senior moment again and could not remember the Declaration of Independence, where he said, you know, the thing. But if you listen to it carefully, as I did again, you can hear he says, "All, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men and women are created equal by God." You know, the thing. I think he suppressed saying God. Actually, it says creator, but, you know, he's taking some liberties with it. I thought it was incredibly cynical and hypocritical for Joe Biden to refer to the Declaration of Independence in the first place. And that's what I pointed out yesterday because, again, and I've said this many times, even when he began to run, I said, you know, the thing I remember most about Joe Biden is the Clarence Thomas hearings. And I have a vivid memory. My wife and I were on vacation And we were driving the Blue Ridge Highway in a sports car. I was having a good time. Until we were listening on NPR to the Clarence Thomas hearings live. Nearly drove off the road when he went off on Clarence Thomas because Clarence Thomas had written about natural rights. And I said to my wife, how in the world can you hold office in this country when you don't, when you reject the fundamental principle that established this government? You know, the whole idea that we could have an independent government was based on the fact that we are all created equal under God in terms of rights. Our natural rights are there, and government's purpose is to defend those rights. And when government not only does not defend it, but it becomes an attacker of those rights, as the British government had by coming after the military weapons at Concord and Lexington, the state-of-the-art rifles. Remember, muskets were predominant at the time by the military. So these rifles that they had at Concord and Lexington were superior to the firearms that most of the British had, and they proved how superior it was as the British retreated back to Boston, as they fired at them with pinpoint accuracy from behind the stone walls. And they also had cannons there. So when the government decides that it's going to destroy your rights, the principles laid out in the Declaration of Independence is that it's not only your right to alter or abolish that government, but it's also your duty to do that. And so he came after Clarence Thomas in those hearings, and this guy has the audacity, the hypocrisy, the cynicism, to start to quote from the Declaration of Independence, but then he chokes when he gets to the word God. In a major gaffe, the Babylon Bee, the satire site, points out, in a major gaffe, Bernie Sanders forgets the words to the Communist Manifesto. During campaign rally, Bernie Sanders attempted to quote the document treasured by his followers, written by Karl Marx, in praise of the glories of communism. Sanders raised his fist and called out, "Workers of the world, well, you know the thing. The proletarians have nothing to lose but their, you know the thing, their houses maybe? The thing. It was shocking," said one supporter. "I thought Bernie was going to be the next Joseph Stalin or Fidel Castro, but he can't even quote our most cherished document, the Communist Manifesto." Well, you know, that is what he is aligned to. But, you know, Biden is trying to portray himself as an American senator. And he hates the Declaration of Independence. And he hates God as well, just like the rest of the Democrats. And that's why he checked himself. I think it was a moment of clarity, as I said. And then he comes out yesterday, and he hailed before the election, after his South Carolina victory. He praised the House Majority Whip, James Clyburn, a black congressional representative from South Carolina. He praised him for his support, and he promised a revival of decency and honest character in his victory speech after South Carolina. And so I just want to look at that cynicism and hypocrisy. Biden praises decency, right? He's going to restore us to decency. And look at what they are pushing on our children with the LGBT agenda. You got this guy that he praised up and down, Buttigieg. Again, you know, they had their little seminar in the Chicken Scratch restaurant. And this guy's like my son, like Bo, my dearest son. This is a guy who is just grooming a 9-year-old child on stage for political gain, because that's where the Democrats' heads are in this today. They want to push sodomy on 9-year-olds. That's what Buttigieg was doing. And this is the guy that's probably going to be his running mate. You want to talk about decency? You want to talk about the Democrat-run schools handing out stickers to 4-year-olds saying future drag queen? Yeah, that's decency as defined by Democrats. Oh, it's so tolerant, isn't it, to have the LGBT plus. And now we know what the plus is. It's pedophiles. Honest character, he says. Honest character and decency. Yeah, he doesn't have any character, and he's totally dishonest. You want to kill babies right after birth? Well, that's what he wants to do. That's his decency and honest character. You know, when you Let's play this because he had another moment just like Bernie Sanders. You know, I played last week a moment where Bernie Sanders is answering questions. An audience member talks to him about overpopulation. Do you have the courage to say what needs to be done, Bernie, about overpopulation? Oh, yes, yes, I know. We're going to pay for abortions. And we're going to do that around the world. All these poor women. We got to reduce overpopulation. We're going to do that by giving money to Planned Parenthood International to open up abortion clinics around the world. And Biden did exactly the same thing. Let's play video clip number six. He did this in a town hall in South Carolina. Biden was asked what he would do to empower women in poor countries to address overpopulation. And he goes on and on about how he's going to fund Planned Parenthood and start giving money for abortions internationally. Let's play video clip six.
The critical point is that a lot of women are not empowered at all. In the United States, a lot aren't empowered. But a lot of women around the world are not empowered at all in their countries. So what we are starting, and we started in our administration, is a program whereby we provide for economic alternatives for women to be able to generate economic growth. And we've had plans that we put in place that allow women to start their own enterprises in their countries. We'd lend to the country if, in fact, they lent
Wait
to
for it.
The
He's
women
going to get to the
who
abortion
are entrepreneurs in their
Mexico
country.
Mexico City policy.
The other thing is I strongly oppose the limitations on the ability for the United States to contribute to organizations in these countries that, in fact, provide women's health and alternatives for choice. We should end that limitation.
And that's what they fought. They don't applaud empowering women, right? They applaud killing babies. Let's just stop it right there because that's all I want to hear from him. Think about this. You know, we've got to stop overpopulation. Well, I want to give opportunities to women. Silence. Nothing at all. And then I want to reverse this Mexico City policy so we can pay for abortions everywhere. Because, you know, that empowers women. Putting them to work and having them kill their kids, that empowers women, according to the Democrat Party. Just think about that. Yeah, this isn't a party with screwed up priorities, is it? They sued in Tennessee as tornadoes were going through Nashville. And we got about 24 people dead at least. They're still going through the rubble. But, you've got a couple of dozen people killed with tornadoes. And what is the first thing the Democrats want to do? They want to keep the voting polls open because that's their God. That's their power. That's what they worship. And it empowers them for women to go to work and kill their kids. Or if they must have kids, turn them over to the government and we'll make future drag queens and socialist Marxists out of them. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Looking back, it's kind of interesting when we see that Bernie Sanders went to Virginia to campaign and he resoundingly lost there. They doubled their turnout, the Democrats did, from 2016. They were much more interested in shutting down Bernie, and they effectively did in Virginia, a runaway victory there. But Bernie was campaigning in Virginia with Ilhan Omar. What do you think that's going to get you? So that's kind of a response to both of them, don't you think? Why would he go to the trouble of bringing her from her home state of Minnesota to Virginia? He thought that was going to help him. As a matter of fact, listen to what he had to say about her when they were campaigning together. He said, she's one of the greatest people I know. We're going to win because we're building a movement that's multiracial, multigenerational, multiethnic, multireligious. It's just not multi-delegate or multi-voter enough. And he went on to say, after she's, he introduced her, he says, I don't know what I can say that Ilhan hasn't already said, so I'm going home. Well, he already said it. It's going to be multiracial, multigenerational, multi-ethnic, multi-religious. We want anything other than America, because, see, that's the subtext of all this. All these people talk about multiculturalism all the time. Just look at how this worked in Europe, right? Any culture but yours. And it doesn't matter what country you are. You know, they want to shut down the British culture, the French culture, the German culture, any culture at all. And you wind up with this gray nothing that you have in the European Union. That's why they're bringing the people in. And that's exactly what Bernie Sanders wants to do. That's what he put her up there as a poster child for. And then it said they'll also be campaigning together in Minnesota. How did that work out for them? Well, he lost there too. He lost in Minnesota as well, with Ilhan Omar campaigning for him in her own home state, with Amy Klobuchar endorsing him in her own home state. I'm sorry, she endorsed Biden, so you know, maybe she did have a little bit of a help there. Biden tried to get in on the act. He couldn't get Ilhan Omar. She was already booked. So he decides that, he will introduce his wife as his sister. Yeah, that's kind of like Ilhan Omar. Let's play video clip number 3. You guys got 3?
They don't call Super Tuesday for nothing. By the way, this is my little sister, Valerie, and I'm Jill's husband. Oh, no, this is my... Oh, you switched on me. This is my wife. This is my sister.
Yeah, they switched up on me. Yeah, that's what she said, right? That's what Ilhan Omar said. Wait, is this my brother or my husband? I don't know. They switched up on me. So, you know, he kind of did his own Ilhan Omar moment. And then he also had another moment where he had some protesters briefly interrupt him. Let's play video clip number 1.
In the neighborhoods we come from, the three...
Let dairy die!
They're holding Save the Dairy Cows. I thought these people wanted to kill the dairy cows because of, methane. Greenhouse parts. I don't know. And so they're rushing on stage. They must be from Chick-fil-A. I don't know. Next, we're going to see the Chick-fil-A crowd come out there. Eat more chicken. Go to Chicken Scratch with Booty Gay. Eat more chicken. Yeah, it's kind of turning into a joke, isn't it? And speaking of jokes, Bloomberg, when he got his first win, the only place that he won, I think, is American Samoa. 6,000 miles away from the U.S. mainland. American Samoa. Did you know that we have an American Samoa that is voting in our presidential election? Yes, he was able to get, I think it is 4 of the delegates. And Tulsi Gabbard got her 1 delegate there. You know what that represented? They, at the time that they went to press with this last night, he'd gotten 4 delegates, she'd gotten 1, and there was 1 that was yet to be awarded. They didn't really know how this was going to work out. Well, he got 49.9% of the vote in American Samoa and 4 delegates. And that represented 175 votes. That's right, 175 votes. How is it? This is what the Democrats ought to be. If you want to get concerned about something, forget about the Electoral College, but ask yourself how American Samoa, it's not even a state, how do they get to have 6 delegates awarded when you look at the number 1, Bloomberg, at 50%, 49.9%, he got 175 votes. Tulsi Gabbard was next with 29% of the vote, and she had 103. Okay, so we're talking about 80% of the vote represented by 178 votes. I mean, so how does a jurisdiction, a territory, with only about 200 voters get to put out 6 delegates? I mean, when you normalize that by the number of people per delegate, I think American Samoa has got better representation than many American states. I thought these were Democrats who wanted people elected by popular vote, and they didn't like the Electoral College. Oh, they love the delegate system, don't they? Oh, yeah, they like that. That's why Hillary Clinton spent just a handful of millions compared to what Bloomberg spent to get all of the superdelegates and even Donna Brazile, the head of the DNC, to help her. Yeah, it was a bargain for her. And so, you know, when you look at this, I think first thing when I saw this, I thought, well, you know, that's those TV commercials. I'm sure he didn't go to American Samoa to campaign. It's just his TV commercials. And these people are sitting there watching television, and they decide they'd vote for Bloomberg. Maybe they didn't watch the debates either. Bernie Sanders is risking antagonizing the critical Democrat bloc by promising to end their health care plans. I talked about this in the Nevada primary. Yeah, the major union that was there in Las Vegas came out and said, we've got a health plan that we really like, and he's going to take that away. And so he's got a lot of union people who don't like this single care health care program. But, you know, Joe Biden is doing the same thing in a much worse way. He's doing Social Security. I want to play for you a Joe Biden talking about what he wants to do with Social Security, video clip number two.
Paul Ryan was correct. When he did the tax code, what's the first thing he decided we had to go after?
Social Security and Medicare.
Social Security.
Now, we need to do something about Social Security and Medicare. That's the only way you can find room to pay for it.
There's old Creepy Joe whispering into the microphone like he does little girls' ears. And here's the secret we're going to tell you. You know, not only are we going to abuse the little children, but we're going to abuse the elders as well because we lied to them. We told them Social Security is going to be around there to help you. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's a lie. Always was a lie, as I've said from the very beginning. First enacted in Germany by Bismarck. They picked the age of 65 because that was life expectancy. They never expected you to start withdrawing money. And after you started to withdraw the money, then it created a problem. And after they started collapsing the population with abortion and telling women, you don't want to have kids, you're empowered by going to work and killing your kids. Well, now the Ponzi scheme is collapsing on itself because you have to, for a Ponzi scheme like Social Security to work, you've got to have more and more people coming in all the time. And it's going just the opposite way. And so there's Joe Biden. Bernie Sanders has told the union people, we're going to get rid of those health care plans that you've worked so hard to negotiate for. Joe Biden is telling everybody, we're going to go after Social Security. Shh, don't tell anybody. Joe's whispering it into the microphone. Well, I just told you. folks, we're going to have joining us later in the program today, Del Bigtree. We're going to talk about vaccines. I'm very concerned about what's going on with the coronavirus and the push on vaccines. I'll talk about this article coming up in the next hour or so. Want a coronavirus vaccine fast? Well, here's a solution. And they talk about having a race, offering a prize, the government. Does that scare you? It ought to. You better be doing things right now to boost your immune system so you don't get sick. You better make sure that you're independent of these people so that you don't get snarfed up in some kind of a, you know, quarantine net if you do go out. We've seen that happening in China. No matter what the situation is, you might have something else that's giving you a fever. They'll take you and quarantine you with a bunch of sick people like they did the people on the cruise ship. So take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got a lot of products that are really going to help you and your family to boost your immune system, to get yourself in top shape. You know, we have things that are safe and effective and natural. That's the key word. Our vitamin mineral fusion drink mix. And you can also get your storable food at InfoWarsStore.com. Welcome back. I was just talking about how Bernie Sanders said, we're going to get rid of all private health care. And the union said, wait a minute, that's a big part of our negotiations. We don't want to give that up. He's not even saying, you like your health care? You can keep your health care. No. We're going to get rid of all of it. He's going to run everything, just like he's going to run the power grid. He's going to nationalize the electric grid, just like his hero Castro nationalized infrastructure and private property. All across Cuba. He loved that. Bernie loved that. And, of course, when Bernie nationalizes the electrical grid nationwide. He's also going to turn off the power generation as well, because he's not going to allow any oil, any coal, any natural gas. And he doesn't have enough to run it. But that's not a problem, because, you know, he's got a virtue signal to everybody how clean he is. It's going to be a clean break with your first world lifestyle if he gets in there. But he wants to shut down health care. These people who love this so much. Again, Obamacare was just the first step to the government running all of your health care. They will allocate who gets health care. They will determine, because there's not unlimited resources. See, this is one of the lies of the neo-Marxists, as George Gilder calls them, the people out of Silicon Valley, the people in the Democrat Party. They buy into the deception, the idiocy of Karl Marx himself, who believed because of the Industrial Revolution that we had unlimited resources, all we had to do was allocate it. And they're telling you the same thing about healthcare. We got unlimited healthcare resources. We just have to figure out how to allocate it. And they will figure it out. If they don't like you, you won't get any health care. We already see that happening in the UK. You know, you talk to, you got a transgender nurse and you say, is that male or female? Boom, you don't get any health care. You're out. You're conservative? Out. We don't like you. Out. Old white male? You're out. Those stinky old white males, as Sarah Young at New York Times said. Yeah, kill them. Or I had Bloomberg saying, you know, we got an old man here. He's got prostate cancer. Just tell him, bye-bye. Can't do anything for you. That's the way they're going to run health care. They will decide who gets health care and who doesn't. And you will have a single provider. Yeah, a monopoly. And so we have an effort by them still to try to save this bridge, Obamacare. Obamacare was there to, as an intermediate step, it would do two things. It would take us toward government control of health care, and it would also break what was left at the same time. And so now the Supreme Court will be deciding the fate of Obamacare on Monday. They agreed to decide a lawsuit that threatens the Obama-era health care. Actually, this lawsuit is trying to defend it. The court will hear an appeal by 20 mainly Democrat states of a lower court ruling that declared part of Obamacare unconstitutional. As a matter of fact, the ruling came out in 2018 by a federal judge in Texas saying that since Obamacare was ruled constitutional by the Supreme Court, they gave us that. You know, it was Justice Roberts who gave that to us. Since he said it was a tax and it was legal, then when they got rid of the tax, this federal judge in Texas, as part of a lawsuit by Texas and 17 other conservative states, so you had 18 conservative states say, look, you got rid of the tax, so now there's no basis for Obamacare. And the judge said, yeah, you're right. According to the opinion that we were given by Justice Roberts, that's right. And so now you've got 20 Democrat states coming back and saying, wait a minute, we want you to overrule again what the states are saying. We want you to overrule the Constitution again. Because, you know, that's what the Supreme Court does all the time. They ignore the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, and they ignore the Constitution altogether. When we come back, we're going to talk about Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice. We should start calling him Two-Face instead of Roberts. And we're going to talk about Roberts versus Roberts. That's really what they should call this court case, Roberts versus Roberts. The first Obamacare case was really that as well, because he wrote both opinions. He's a man of two minds and two faces, and we will talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As I said at the top of the hour, we've had, you know, first we had Obamacare that was put in, and we'll talk about how that came in. And as a matter of fact, let's do that right now, because we have Jonathan Turley. So Chief Justice John Roberts is heading down a collision course with himself. This is the guy who wrote both opinions, you know, dissenting and concurring, you know, saying Obamacare is legal. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. What is going on with this guy, right? And now he's going to have to rule on it again. because they said they're going to hear an appeal case. You know, after that was passed, it was the tax was shut down. And so a federal judge said, well, that's it then. Obamacare is not allowed to. You've basically taken the basis for saying we're going to force this on everybody. As Jonathan Turley points out, he said conservatives are unsure if Roberts will deliver or deflect the coup de grace with decisions on Obamacare and on abortion. In both of the cases, he will grapple with his previous views that would push him to vote for decisions with sweeping impacts. For a chief justice who gets sticker shock at such moments, Roberts may find himself evading his prior self and shaping the future court. Well, let's understand who this guy is. This guy is a creature of the bureaucracy, of the deep state. And you could see that in the impeachment trial, the way he gagged Rand Paul. Hey, you're not even going to, no, don't even approach the name of the whistleblower, Eric Chiramella. Eric CIA Ramella. You don't even say, not going to let you even ask the question. A very substantial question, tangentially referring to him. No, not going to let that happen. Roberts in Obamacare sided with the conservative justices that requiring individuals to buy insurance was a flagrant violation of federalism guarantees, a view I shared, says Jonathan Turley. Look, it's just for them to even rule on what kind of insurance the federal government can tell you to get, I mean, that's a clear violation of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. Any powers that are not expressly given to you, you don't have. Those powers are retained by the states and by the people. Federal government, certainly not these political judges. Federal government has no say in terms of telling you what kind of insurance you have to have or whether you must have insurance. And so he wrote that. He said, but in a last-minute addition, Roberts voted with the four liberal justices, declaring that none of that matters because he viewed the individual mandate as a tax. And I said at the time, this is pretty much, as far as I could tell, unprecedented that you would have a justice writing both the concurring and dissenting opinion, the majority and the dissenting opinions. He was a man of two minds and two faces. And he said it was a surprising turn. We all thought it was surprising. And we all said at the time, look at this. This guy's been blackmailed. And I still believe that Roberts was blackmailed. I think they got something on him. Because everybody said Obamacare is not going to go. There's clearly no authority to dictate this to anybody under the Constitution. They can't invent it. And they said, yeah, and we've already got, you know, Roberts has already written the decision saying, no, that's not going to happen. And then he reversed himself at the last minute. At the last minute. He said, it was a surprising turn, says Jonathan Turley, since both sides had already denied that this was a tax. So they'd already shut that down. It didn't matter that he had written things like, you can't force people to buy insurance. And it didn't matter that both sides had said, this is not a tax. He said, well, at the last minute, I'm going to call it a tax and say that we can do it. And you tell me if you don't think somebody had something on this guy in Washington. Anybody ever look to see if he's got any connection with Jeffrey Epstein? I'm just asking. I don't know. Just asking for a friend. But by declaring the individual mandate as an exercise of the taxing authority of Congress, Roberts saved the law, writes Jonathan Turley. So Congress called his bluff and zeroed out the tax, which was the very thing that Roberts had said was needed to sustain Obamacare as a constitutional matter. And so in that 2018 decision from the Texas judge, a lawsuit that was brought by 18 conservative states, the judge said, that's right. If it's a tax and there's no tax, then you have no basis for Obamacare. And he struck down the entire law based on what Roberts had said. And so now you've got the Democrats trying to save this by coming back in and saying, well, you know, we want this to be heard again. We now have also, in terms of legal issues, we have New Mexico sheriffs who are preparing to sue over the red flag law that's been enacted at the state level there. New Mexico Sheriff Tony Mace says he and other sheriffs from around the state are meeting with attorneys this week as they get ready to file suit over the state's new red flag law, signed last week by Governor Michelle Grisham. He and other sheriffs are taking the matter to court. Remember, we had Sheriff Mack back during the Clinton administration. He took it all the way to the Supreme Court, the Brady Bill, the thing that they put through, and sued over that and won. Here, with a state law in Arizona, Sheriff Mace believes the new law infringes on the rights of residents in New Mexico, not just on their right to keep and bear arms. He says the law establishes a bizarre civil search warrant process that violates the Fourth Amendment and the seizure of firearms of those who have not been accused of a crime, much less convicted of a crime, is also a violation of the Fifth Amendment's taking clause. But, you know, we've had the situation that's been established now for a long time in our country that because of the drug war and because of Ronald Reagan's Attorney General, Ed Meese, he said, well, we're going to enact what we call civil asset forfeiture. See, you can call it civil and you have no protections under the Criminal Act. You know, you have all these people talking about, well, you know, we don't have the Constitution anymore. We're now under maritime law and so forth. Look, we're under civil law. We're under civil law. We have bureaucracies who write the laws, who set up the taxes, who set up the fines. That started with the IRS. And they said, well, you know, we're going to not give you any due process. You're going to have no presumption of innocence. We can fine you for whatever. We can impute tax to you, and then you have to prove to us that you're innocent. And in the meantime, we can take your property. And that's basically the way civil asset forfeiture works under the war on drugs. They just call it civil, and they can take everything that you've got. And we've got all these different bureaucracies that are doing it. And now the state governments are doing it. They put out a search warrant, but they call it a civil search warrant. There's nothing civil about tyranny. There's nothing civil about taking our human rights, our God-given natural rights. There's nothing civil about violating the Constitution that they swore to uphold. But that's what they're doing all the time. And they do it with our children. They do it with CPS. All these Democrats who cry about child separation, they don't care when CPS comes in and takes children without any due process. And in only 16% of the cases, are there even allegations of violence or sexual abuse against those children? And in a small minority of those, that is actually true. You know, when the government alleges something, that generally means that it's not true. But that does happen occasionally, and that is the type of thing where they should act. But it should be possible, shouldn't it, if they didn't have their courts so clogged by the number of people that they wrongfully accuse and wrongfully take children from? They should be able to adjudicate those few cases where there is a legitimate allegation that merits investigation. They should be able to do that very quickly without taking the children and holding them for months. We know what's behind all of these lies, whether it's CPS confiscating kids, whether it's civil asset forfeiture taking your car, your cash, your home under the war on drugs, or whether it is a civil search warrant to take away your firearms, to take away your right to keep and bear arms. And he goes on to say in this article from bearingarms.com, there's also a pragmatic argument against red flag gun laws, and that's what I've said from the very beginning. You're going to go out and take the firearms from people, right? Well, you still left the dangerous person behind. They could still easily get a car, a club, an axe, any of that. The dangerous person is out there. You're not doing anything about psychological care for them. And also, in this particular case, they're giving them 48 hours, this dangerous person who has to have their guns confiscated, they're giving them 48 hours to turn it in themselves. Yeah, because, you know, they can be trusted. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's now being reported by Axios, as everybody kind of expected. Although you can't really tell from the personality of Mike Bloomberg. He's such an arrogant elitist. You couldn't tell if he was going to get out, if he's going to continue to soldier on like Elizabeth Warren without any hope of victory, because that certainly is her personality. But now Axios is reporting that Michael Bloomberg is going to suspend his presidential campaign I guess you could say that after voters threw Bloomberg up against the wall, he stopped and frisked his campaign advisors. What did you say? We were talking about this during the break, Travis. You had something to say about how we identify these billionaires who are buying elections, right? Yeah, you just Xerox a copy of their checks and send them out. And as we can see with the Supreme Court, I want to get back to what the Supreme Court is going to be doing here, because it's not just decisions on the Obamacare decision and also on revisiting Roe v. Wade. That's coming before them again. But they're also looking, as NPR points out, the Supreme Court will eye the president's power to say, you're fired. You're fired. Should the president be able to fire people that are in the administration? Oh, of course not. That's what got everybody so upset about James Comey and Andrew McCabe, even though the people of the FBI said, McCabe needs to go. This guy is absolutely corrupt. They were still furious about that, right? Because you just don't fire people that are in the bureaucracy. And at the center of this particular case is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the thing that Elizabeth Warren created, the Frankenstein monster that she created. It was supposed to make sure that consumers were protected. But in reality, as I pointed out, what they did was they enacted a lot of excessive paperwork. What else would you expect from something that was created by Elizabeth Warren? So much paperwork that you saw for many years on the Drudge Report. Well, this year we had 150. This year we had 175 banks go out of business, small and independent businesses. You don't see those reports anymore because they're all gone. But for years, they were going out 150, 200 at a time. They were disappearing because they could no longer comply with the regulations to make loans. So the small businesses, medium-sized businesses were eradicated. And that was the design. That's why they created the so-called Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They're not protecting anybody. They're protecting the big banks. And in this NPR article, they lay out the situation. Well, you know, in 2008, the economy was reeling from decades of mismanagement. No, it all began when you started to create the too big to fail banks. And everybody said that was going to happen. When the Clinton administration approved the merger between Nations Bank and Bank of America. Nations Bank was headquartered in North Carolina at the time. I remember it very well. And he had Erskine Bowles on his staff who approved this. Erskine Bowles had connections to Nations Bank in North Carolina. Bank of America was out of California. They merged. They put their headquarters in Charlotte. And everybody was saying, you're going to set off a wave of bank mergers, and we're going to wind up with only half dozen banks. Voila! That's exactly what happened. Because the big banks got bailed out. Many of the smaller banks failed when the mortgage scams collapsed in 2008. And the ones that were left were driven out of business by the regulatory requirements of the Consumer Protection Financial, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And it was very predictable that this was going to happen. Now, the other thing that was amazing about this was that unlike some of these organizations like the Federal Trade Commission or these other agencies, they would typically have multiple directors. You see, the Federal Elections Commission and so forth, they have people in charge of these agencies, and they call them commissioners, and they typically have a requirement that you have to have with a multiple commissioners or directors, depending on what the agency is, you have to have it equally divided between the two parties. Because, you know, I guess somewhere at some point in time they slipped it in the Constitution that you can only have two parties, and those two parties will be the Democrats and Republicans. And they keep establishing and reestablishing that non-constitutional requirement. But nevertheless, you know, there's supposed to be some kind of a political balance there and having multiple commissioners. And this all came up, quite frankly, because we saw that the Consumer Financial Protection Board had a single individual ruling over it. And everybody said that is a very bad design. And then when that first individual left, the number two said, I'm now in charge. I'm now in charge. And President Trump said, no, you're not. I'm going to pick who's going to run this. And so now there's a big lawsuit here. And NPR, of course, is siding against President Trump and with the bureaucracy, the unaccountable bureaucracy, going back and saying, well, in 1935, FDR tried to fire one of the commissioners on the Federal Trade Commission. He didn't have a problem with his job performance. He just didn't like the fact that he was appointed by a previous president. See, that's what this is really about. And they said, well, yeah, but the conservatives on the Supreme Court, they're going to side with Trump, even though this is somewhat unprecedented to not have a multi-member commission that is going to run this. Also, we've had the Supreme Court decline to disturb President Trump's executive order. You know, he said, well, we're going to stop bump stocks. And so he's got, Barr to run this thing through. And they're not going to overturn that because, you know, we have a president who is a dictator. Now, he may not be able to do anything against the bureaucracy, but he can certainly take away anything that you peons have out there, right? Just by saying so. Which brings us to Attorney General Barr. You know, we have Rand Paul, and I played this for you talking about how the president will not sign a clean renewal of FISA without some kind of reform. And against Rand Paul, against the ACLU, against FreedomWorks, against Mike Lee, who all want to see some reform of this out-of-control surveillance state that just tried to throw President Trump out of office, the people who are trying to continue this are, surprise, Mitch McConnell and Attorney General Barr. Now, if you need to know why Attorney General Barr is siding against this, I'll just go back and give you a little bit of history, and this is why I opposed him from the very beginning. He was first Attorney General, not under President Trump, but he served as Attorney General under George H.W. Bush, 1991 to 1993. But his relationship with George H.W. Bush goes back way before that. He was working at the CIA, Barr was, 1971 to 1977. And then George H.W. Bush was made director of the CIA in 1976, and he left in 1977. Attorney General Barr left at the same time. I guess he didn't want to work for anybody if they weren't named George H.W. Bush. And, of course, Bush's connections to the CIA go back to the Bay of Pigs, not just to his appointment as CIA director. But it's even more important than that, because in 1992, Attorney General Barr was pushing a surveillance program to get the phone records of Americans who are not even alleged to have committed a crime. Yes, it all began with him. Remember Mr. and Mrs. Verizon that Rand Paul talked about? Well, A.G. Barr went on to work for Verizon and became a multimillionaire there. How about that?
Without the freedom to offend, there is no free speech. It's the David Knight Show. And now, your host, David Knight.
Joining us now is Alex Newman. He's a writer at thenewamerican.com. You can also find him on Twitter at @AlexNewman_JOU, as in journalist. And, of course, Alex is also has a series of interviews that he does at The New American, and lately he's been focusing a lot on education. We've had him on with his attempt to try to wake up America as to what's going on in our schools, and I want to talk to him about that again now, the Freedom Project that they have at The New American. And again, you can send away to The New American, and they have an excellent book about the problem with schools. And thank you for joining us, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Before we get into this, too, thank you for coming on. I want to tell people how they can get that excellent magazine that's put out by The New American talking about schools. And what's that called?
Yeah. Thank you so much, David. So actually, I have a copy of it right here. It's called Rescuing Our Children. And
that's right.
We literally just this week we're releasing the second edition of it. I think we're in the seventh or eighth printing. And we decided to expand it a little bit. We put in some new ads. We added some new articles, expanded some of the older articles. And that can be obtained either in PDF or in print or in bulk. And if you want to get 100 or so, you can do that at thenewamerican.com. rescuingourchildren. And our goal is to get out 1 million, and we'll only be able to do that if people who care about our children, people who care about the future of this country, get involved and help out.
And it is an excellent resource, folks. You must get this. It doesn't matter if you don't have any kids who are school age, because when Alex was on before, he explained, you know, what's going to happen if your kids are in a burning school building, right? You're going to get them out. But you've also got to put out the fire, because it's going to burn down your community. And if you want to know what's going on, why we have so many young Marxists that are backing Bernie Sanders, it's the schools. And they're going to burn down your society and your community. It doesn't matter if your kids are grown and maybe they were able to navigate through this K through 12 government school system, and maybe with your help they came out normal, but or maybe they didn't come out normal, but maybe real life normalized them. But you've got to stop this from happening to them and to yourself and your community. If you, even if you don't have any kids that are in school, you need to find out what's going on with this, and that is addressed in this resource. Rescuing our children. You know, you wrote an article on the New American, Alex, about transgenderism growing by 1,500% in Sweden. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you, David. And, you know, Sweden is kind of one or two steps ahead of us. And what I've realized is the globalists, the establishment, they use Sweden as kind of a petri dish. And I know because I lived there for almost a decade. Some of my kids were born there. My wife is from there. So they kind of try out these kooky, crazy ideas in Sweden, which is, you know, a lot more susceptible to manipulation than, say, the American people are. And then they move that over to the United States. So the transgender stuff began there. The homosexual marriage started there. Then they brought it here. And what we're seeing in Sweden is essentially one step ahead of what's going on in California. Total brainwashing in the schools, convincing children they might have been born in the wrong body, and that they take hormones and, you know, submit to surgery to mutilate their genitals, then they can be the other sex, which is, of course, ridiculous. And it's working. It's working really well. The government just released some data last month in February showing there had been a 1,500% increase in transgenderism among children just in the last decade, David. So 10
That's
years of 15
times. 15 times the number of transgender kids that they had before. Yeah.
That's right. And the government, they say, oh, we don't know what's going on here. We just have to make sure we do more brainwashing so that the transgenders don't feel left out. And of course, the brainwashing is what caused it. And, you know, we're seeing the same thing in California also, David. The UCLA released a study last year. They found that 27% of California's children now are self-described gender nonconforming. So, you know, they don't accept that they're boys or girls. And it's a direct result of the brainwashing, the indoctrination in the schools with air support from Hollyweird and the media.
Yeah. And you've got an article as well talking about a sex education bill in Kentucky. I mean, we're not talking about Sweden. We're not talking about California. We're talking about Kentucky, conservative Kentucky. And this sex education bill and the mandates in here are going to start sexualizing kids in kindergarten, from kindergarten through the 12th grade. And one of the things you point out in here is that this bill is about social, emotional, and mental health education. It will focus on healthy relationships, consent, critical thinking, responsible decision-making, and acceptance of differences, explains one of the Democrats who supports this. And when I look at this, the word that pops out to me is consent, Alex, because I've said from the very beginning, the reason they are confusing these kids is because they want to say, if you can make up your mind what gender you are in kindergarten, well, then you can consent to sex. And this is really a pedophile agenda, to try to say if they're mature enough that they can make these decisions about what gender they are way before puberty, then they can also consent to sex.
Nail on the head, David. And that's exactly what we're seeing. In fact, this has already started in California. We broke a story at the Freedom Project and the New American about pedophilia being taught to school children. Actually, a concerned mother sent us the curriculum. In California, they passed an LGBT history law where every government public school has to teach the children about LGBT history. So they start off with Harvey Milk, you know, the child rapist who became the first openly elected homosexual to elected office in America. They don't teach the kids that he raped children and some of them went on to kill themselves. And then as they go down the curriculum, I've got a copy of it. They say, and in ancient Greece, you know, grown men used to take little boys under their wing and they would have sex with them, you know, as if it's just totally normal. And then a mom, actually, I got the video. Her name's Stephanie Yates. She leads Informed Parents of California. We posted it up online. It's been seen hundreds of thousands of times. Snopes ironically says it's fake news, even though we have the video to prove it. And so the mom says, why are you teaching our children pedophilia? And the assistant superintendent of curricula in this district says, Well, you know, it's a sexual orientation that's existed in history. So we think it's really important. That's, you know, that's what the law says. So think about this, guys. They're teaching children that child rape is a sexual orientation. It's against the law in California and 25 other states to discriminate based on sexual orientation. And they're teaching the children that pedophilia is a sexual orientation. You don't have to be a genius to figure out where this is going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they, you see these people who identify themselves as MAPs, minor attracted person. Right. Oh, I'm just attracted to sexually attracted to children, but I don't actually act out on that attraction. Yeah, right. Not at the moment they want to admit that because it's still criminal. But that's where they're pushing everybody, and that's where they're pushing the children. It was absolutely amazing to me to see Booty Gay. That's what I call Booty Judge, because you know he's probably pretty proud of that name. Actually, he probably wished that he could change it to that. But anyway. He had a 9-year-old up on stage with him, and it was the parents who were pushing this kid forward, just like we see them doing at these drag queen story time hours and so forth. But the parents had pushed him to do this, and he writes a little question to Booty Gay saying, I'm 9 years old, and I want to have the courage that you have to come out. And it's like, what in the world are they doing this for? I mean, that was nothing but a display of pedophilia, in my opinion. He was grooming that kid openly with the assistance of the parents. And Booty Gay was even saying, well, you're an example to everybody. Yeah, he surely was.
Yeah, that's where this is all going, David. And I hope parents will realize this. In fact, in this special report on rescuing our children, and I've been touring the country and actually the world now speaking about this, I've got a video where I show people the genesis of this. In the early 1990s, sodomy was actually still a crime across most of the United States. It wasn't until 2001 that the Supreme Court ruled against Texas's sodomy law. And they started teaching children, early 1990s, first grade, second grade, third grade. I've got the video from the documentary they were showing to children. Hey, little kids, let's be pretend judges today. And there's this mean old law on the books that loving gay people who just love each other and just want to be married, they're banned from doing that. You know, let's be pretend judges. What should we do about this legislation? And, of course, all the little kids with that kind of guidance, oh, we should strike that down. Within one generation, the pretend judges on our Supreme Court were striking down our marriage laws and... guess what? The agenda is very sinister.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember when they pushed the terminology of gay. And I subsequently, you know, they did that in the 1970s. I subsequently got an unabridged Webster's dictionary, 650,000 words in it. It was gigantic. Even with fine print, it didn't have the word homosexual in it because it was written in the 1950s. They didn't even use a neutral term. They just called it sodomy. We'll be right back with Alex Newman. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Alex Newman, thenewamerican.com, and of course he also has the Freedom Project and various media there, the Rescuing Our Children publication to talk about what's going on in our government schools. We're just talking about a sex ed mandate for kindergarten through 12th grade filed in conservative Kentucky, where they're talking about, well, we want to focus on healthy relationships and critical thinking and decision-making and consent as they sexualize these kids starting in kindergarten. But it's not going to just stop there. They're not interested in just getting the kids in that venue. They also want to push this into the family. Tell us a little bit about this new buzzword, Alex, the adverse childhood experiences and how this is being used by these people who are not wanting to educate our children about reading and writing and that type of thing. No, no, no. This is all about the brave new schools, isn't it?
It sure is, David. And so now what's going on? They've created this new term, adverse childhood experiences. And they say, oh, you know, children suffer all sorts of adverse childhood experiences. And it's our job as the all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful government to find out what those experiences might be and help you deal with them. And so they are giving children all over the country now these highly intrusive questionnaires designed to pry into your home. So, you know, they might ask how your parents talk to each other, how your parents talk to you. You know, do your parents ever spank you? Does anyone drink in your house? Have you had lots of homosexual sex? Do you like to take ecstasy? You know, things like this. And so even if the child hasn't experienced any of these things, it normalizes the idea for them. Well, maybe everybody else is having homosexual sex. Maybe everybody else is taking drugs. And it serves as kind of a vacuum cleaner to just vacuum data up about these children, about their family, about the home. Very, very dangerous. And, you know, of course, there's not a job for the government to know these things. And yet now this is becoming ubiquitous. They're giving psychiatric evaluations to children. They're having teachers and school counselors give everybody psychiatric evaluations based on the DSM-5, which is, you know, in my opinion, just a bunch of quackery. So very, very dangerous stuff happens.
It seems to me like these types of things, you know, where the FBI goes in and they start questioning somebody, right? I mean, and then they create a process crime out of it. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're using children to create a process crime to tear apart the family, asking them a whole bunch of questions. And then the inquisitor, who's doing this evidently in private, can interpret those answers that are coming from a child in a way that allows them to then come after the family. And we already know that CPS will take your kids without any due process, that you are have to then try to prove your innocence. I mean, this seems to me like this is just an extension of the CPS child kidnapping that we have seen going on across the country.
It absolutely is, David. And so, you know, the government now has its idea of how children should behave, how they should believe, what a family ought to look like. And so if this child indicates, you know, we have a patriarchal family, you know, maybe the father's still the head of the household, you know, old-fashioned 1950s, 60s, so, oh, well, you know, we can't have that. Got to have an intervention here, right? And a lot of this, it melds into what they're calling now social and emotional learning. So they're openly telling us they're not focused on academics anymore. They're not teaching your children facts, how to read, how to do math. They're teaching them what values and what attitudes and beliefs they ought to have on things like homosexual marriage and abortion and borders and gun rights, right? And of course, they're all against individual liberty. And it all
melds together.
Yeah,
it's social engineering, and we've seen the results of this. I mean, look at this generation, the millennials that we have out there. Look at how they have been turned by the government into these Marxist monsters because of the social agendas that they feed down their, you know, feed them as they're in school. They, like you said, they're not interested in giving them the tools of learning. They don't want them to be able to read and think for themselves. Critical thinking is actually the last thing that they want them to do. They want groupthink. They want them to listen to authority figures. And as you point out in this article, in Indiana, I mean, we're talking about Kentucky and Indiana. These are Republican states. They're supposed to be conservative. In Indiana, lawmakers are pushing legislation that would conscript all government school teachers into serving as inquisitors. Inquisitors. That's exactly what I just can't believe that we're turning this country into a complete surveillance state now, even using children to inform against parents.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, the Soviet Union, that Nazi Germany would have blushed. I mean, they never had these kind of capabilities. They never would have said, hey, you know, we're gonna get this information from your children. And yet now it's happening in America and people are asleep. They don't want to recognize it. Every time you send your children to that government school, you're putting them at risk. You're putting your family at risk. And, you know, I think parents, you're the first line of defense. If you don't protect your children, nobody else is going to do it for you.
That's right. And if you are you're ignorant enough to put your kids in that kind of an environment, just understand they are setting in place the structures that will be used to come after you perhaps take your children away, perhaps even put you in jail by misconstruing what somebody has said. And if you don't believe they'll do that, just pay attention to what the FBI is constantly doing to people with their 302s. But let's change gears now. And let's talk about a Trump nominee that you wrote an article back at the beginning of February, and it's still going on, and there's looks like it's actually not been stopped. Judy Shelton was nominated by President Trump to the Federal Reserve, got a lot of pushback from GOP senators. They didn't like somebody who is talking about gold being put into the Federal Reserve. Now, I'd like to see the Federal Reserve go completely. But presidents get assassinated for that type of thing. One of the things that you could do is you could put somebody in who has talked a lot about free markets and about a hard currency, which is in the Constitution. Talk to us a little bit about the Judy Shelton nomination. Where is it?
Yeah, thank you, David.
So, why do we like it? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, this lady is the best nominee I have ever seen in my lifetime for the Federal Reserve Board. You know, Alan Greenspan had a history of talking about gold and these kinds of things, but as soon as he was in the Federal Reserve, he totally sold out. But this lady has a long track record. Her name is Judy Shelton. She's worked with a lot of liberty-minded organizations. She believes in sound money. She says the Federal Reserve is a failed institution. They're trying to centrally plan interest rates. You know, why don't we just bring back the old, you know, Soviet central planning committees? Talked about the need to, you know, go back to a hard currency. like one based on gold, and get the Federal Reserve out of the business of trying to centrally plan the economy. And if you listen to what she says, if you read her essays, I mean, she gets it, right? She talks about how the Federal Reserve has rigged the economy in favor of Wall Street and the 1%. She's right. Nail on the head. And so Trump has nominated her and one conventional nominee, we might say, you know, regular old, you know, pro Federal Reserve hack. And right. There is talk that Trump wants to actually make her the chairwoman of the Federal Reserve in the days ahead. But as you mentioned, you know, rhinos in Congress are already working on fighting this, including some who, you know, claim to be conservative. Shelby, Senator Shelby out of Alabama, is one of the ones who's putting up resistance. And so there is an establishment effort to block her, but she's a very good nominee.
Yeah, and news has just come out. Shelby said that he will not block her if other GOP senators who have expressed misgivings about her decide to back her. It's kind of interesting. And, you know, even as we're talking about the fact that she doesn't think that they ought to centrally plan the economy and manipulate interest rates, that they ought to be actually tied to gold, as it says in the Constitution, President Trump, you know, as we saw this week, the Fed chair just dropped interest rates by a full half a point, considering how low they are. That's a big percentage drop. And President Trump said, that's not enough. You got to do more. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, what do you make of that? That President Trump would be pushing the Federal Reserve to manipulate interest rates and manipulate them down to help the economy. And then he would nominate somebody who says, well, that's not really what the Federal Reserve should be doing.
You know, it's really interesting, David, because Trump understands all this. In the 2016 campaign, he talked exactly, I mean, we wrote an article about it at the New American. He talked about how the Federal Reserve was juicing and manipulating the economy by creating ridiculously low interest rates to boost economic activity and make Obama look good. So Trump understands perfectly what's going on here. He also understands that if the Federal Reserve raises interest rates in this manipulated economy, it could be catastrophic for the economy. And so, you know, on the one hand, he understands the problem. He understands the solution. He's talked about gold-backed currency. So has Pence. But on the other, he recognizes that if they do go forward and raise interest rates, it'll cause some very severe economic damage going right into the election. It'll be very problematic for his reelection campaign and for the economy, for the stock market. So, you know, a lot going on here. But I'm encouraged by the fact that Trump has publicly expressed his understanding of these issues and that he's nominated somebody like Judy Shelton to.
And I think he also understands how the coronavirus is being weaponized against him. I mean, they never responded like that to any previous thing like swine flu or anything like that. And this is a real economic consequence that's coming down the road. They're weaponizing this to, because they know that the only thing that they've got against President Trump would be to tank the economy. If they're not able to do that, he is essentially a shoo-in. So that's their only hope. So I think that's really what he's doing in terms of trying to get the Fed to drop the interest rates even more. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, you can find Alex Newman at thenewamerican.com, and you can find him on Twitter at alex_JOU. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much, David. God bless.
Thank you. And we've just got a few seconds here, folks. We're going to talk about coronavirus on the other side of the break. If you are not prepared, if you're not preparing to strengthen the health of your family with natural supplements like we have at InfoWarsStore.com, if you're not prepared to be able to withstand if there are shortages, we're now seeing shortages in medical supplies as well as food, make sure that you are prepared, not just for this event, but for future events. InfoWarsStore.com.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Del Bigtree and his program, Highwire, is always focused on forced vaccines, making sure that you have informed consent, that you understand the risks involved in this. So he focuses on vaccines quite a bit. I'm very concerned about forced vaccines, the lack of informed consent as we see where we're headed with this coronavirus. I said from the very beginning, we were talking about the connections to the Gates Foundation, and now you see this type of stuff falling into line. So we're going to talk to him about that and about other health issues at the bottom of the hour. Coming up in the next segment, I'm going to talk about the Turkish invasion of Greece. I had that on my list yesterday of things to talk about, and I didn't get to it yesterday. So we're going to catch up on that today. There's been some new developments in Turkey and in Greece. But before we do, I just want to go back to this story, this conflict that has now emerged within the Republican Party as to whether or not they're going to allow this criminal use, abuse of FISA. Remember, FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And they put that in as a result of investigations that began in Frank Church's Senate committee looking at CIA abuses. The House had one going on at the same time under Congressman Pike. They were looking at abuses by the NSA. Both of these organizations, newly created after World War II, immediately began spying on Americans. We were told, oh, it's going to protect us from foreign bad actors and terrorists and spies and so forth. But they immediately began looking at Americans. And as a result of those investigations, the Congress passed the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, saying you're not going to surveil any Americans without a search warrant, as required under the Constitution. You're also not going to surveil any foreign citizens in America without a search warrant, as required under the Constitution. You can look at foreigners in foreign countries, not Americans in foreign countries, but foreigners in foreign countries, under FISA. And so they set up the review, the so-called FISA court. It's not a court. You've got one judge. You've got one person from the government going before that judge saying, I want a search warrant. And we've seen how that's been abused. Rand Paul has talked about how they are doing dragnet surveillance of all Americans. We knew that was happening. We had Ron Wyden ask that to James Clapper, and James Clapper committed perjury before all of the American people. No, we're not listening to everybody. And then he was exposed within just a couple of months by the leaks of Ed Snowden released through WikiLeaks. Nothing was ever done to James Clapper for lying about something that was a crime against every single American, committing perjury about a crime they committed against every American. But you have to understand, this is where A.G. Barr is coming from as well. This is why I said I opposed him from the very beginning. He was a creature of the CIA. He was at the CIA before George Bush was officially affiliated with them. George Bush was part of the, we've been talking about Cuba a lot. Well, you know, George Bush was right there with the Bay of Pigs invasion. He had a couple of different ships. One of them was named Zapata, after the same as his oil company. Another one was named Barba, and we had a lot of people say that George Bush was involved in that. Of course, the establishment will tell you that he wasn't. He was just picked out of thin air with no experience with the CIA whatsoever to be CIA director. Yeah, right. Well, he left in 1977, and when he left, A.G. Barr left the CIA with him. And then George H.W. Bush made Barr his attorney general in 1991. While attorney general under George H.W. Bush, it was William Barr who first formalized what has now become the pattern for post-9/11 surveillance of Americans, looking at Americans' international phone records. And he did this. He was criticized by an inspector general from the Department of Justice at the same time, saying that he had launched this without review. It actually became a blueprint for what they're doing, and now he is defending this. Got to take a break. I'm going to continue this on the other side because this is something we really need to pay attention to. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As we were just talking about A.G. Barr, again, the day after he went to senators and said, no, we're going to reauthorize spying on Americans without any reforms, without any restrictions. What a surprise. Because he's the guy who first started doing this back in 1992. Actually, he's not the guy who first started doing it. As I pointed out at the top of the hour, it was already being done by the CIA, the NSA, immediately after they were created, in the 1950s, 1960s. And that's why it was very well known by the senators at the time. That's why they created the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and the FISA court, which have now been abused and turned into a star chamber to try to overthrow our election, to come after President Trump and people on his staff. And this is in 1992 when Barr was the Attorney General for George H.W. Bush after the two of them were CIA buddies together. And he started spying on Americans at that point in time. Now, understand, at that point in time, that was a clear violation of the FISA Act as Attorney General. This is the guy who is supposed to be the chief law enforcement officer after the president, right? Because the Attorney General is appointed by the president, answers to the president, is a part of the executive branch. So the president is really the chief law enforcement officer. But right underneath him is the Department of Justice, because they are the prosecutors, right? They decide who they're going to come after. The FBI is supposed to investigate people. You have the courts who are going to try the cases. But it's the Justice Department that are the prosecutors. And yet here's this guy sworn to uphold the law, sworn to uphold the Constitution. And again, he's thumbing his nose at FISA. He's thumbing his nose at the Constitution. And this is Attorney General Barr in 1992. And the Department of Justice Inspector General said that this was outrageous, said it was he launched this without an appropriate review, and that it was a blueprint for spying. And, of course, Rand Paul pointed out that after they started doing it openly, you know, we've had NSA whistleblowers, William Binney, Thomas Drake, others said, wait a minute, we had a way that we could anonymously collect information on people and not do anything about this until we saw that there was a crime, and then we could go through a legal process to start investigating those individuals. But they didn't want that. They went with a dragnet surveillance program instead, and that's why they became whistleblowers. And the Congress didn't want to hear about it. That's why they subsequently in the Obama administration tried to prosecute Binney and Drake and others. You know, breaking in on Binney while he was at home and drawing up formal charges against Thomas Drake for things that they had after the fact classified. You know, they had documents that, oh, you've got documents here at home. You're not allowed to have those. And those are classified documents. It was like, security is your friend. It's like, you know, the orientation class thing. It wasn't, there was nothing at all about that. They subsequently classified that to try to entrap Thomas Drake. This is how desperately the establishment, it happened under Obama, but look, the presidents are not in charge of these things. The real government, the military industrial complex, the surveillance state is the one that's doing this, and it's getting increasingly draconian. But I'm telling you that Attorney General Barr is one of those people, and that's why you should be very concerned about him. I don't see him as a defender of President Trump. I see him as somebody who is a fifth columnist in the Trump administration for the surveillance state. And so he and Mitch McConnell are pushing to reauthorize this without any reforms. Why would we ever want to have reform of something that was secretive and abused? It's now no longer a secret how it's been abused to try to overthrow our election. Why would we ever want to reform that, right? No, it's just fine. Let's go on with it. It's set to expire this month. And so President Trump told Rand Paul, since he's been a victim of this, he said the day after Barr goes to the Senate, says, yeah, we're going to reauthorize this. No changes. President Trump told Rand Paul, no, I'd like to see this change. And so Rand Paul came out with that. It says the president's not going to sign a clean renewal of FISA without reform. And so, again, conflicting with AG Barr, like he's had multiple conflicts in the last couple of weeks. So now Rand Paul, Mike Lee, along with Barr, are going to meet with Trump. He says, we want to get everybody on the same page. Well, you get everybody on the same page by getting rid of the CIA backstabber, William Barr. Get him out. This is a guy who also, by the way, it was known that the U.S. was on the side of Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq war, that we gave them intelligence to gas, to use chemical weapons. Yeah, that's when we really had weapons of mass destruction. We gave the Iraqis intelligence about how to take out the Iranians. And it was A.G. Barr that they went to cover up. Well, some people were calling Iraqgate, the fact that we had the CIA and the U.S. government supporting Saddam Hussein. That was before we went to war to overthrow him and so forth. And he was called the general of cover-ups by conservative columnist William Safire for that, A.G. Barr. And So there he is. He doesn't look like he's too happy about what I'm saying here. Just going down his resume. By the way, you know, as Rand Paul said, you're spying on Mr. and Mrs. Verizon. Yeah, that's exactly what he instituted. And ironically enough, when he left government, he went to work for Verizon and became a multimillionaire. And so the question is, are they going to continue on with this or not? It's also the Democrats who want to reauthorize FISA without any reforms. Last week, one House aide told National Review that last week, House Republicans who want to have this reformed sent a letter to Nancy Pelosi warning Democrats not to slip FISA reauthorization into a coronavirus budget bill. They want to get this coronavirus thing through here. So don't put the. We know that you guys want to keep this CIA tool here. White House official told the Wall Street Journal there are a lot of strong views about what should happen. So it's time that everyone start talking among themselves to see if there's any chance of unity among Republicans prior to March 15th. See, there's unity with Democrats that they want to keep the star chamber process. They want to keep the surveillance state in power. They don't support the Constitution, due process, any of that stuff. That's, you know, the Democrats are unified on that. No free speech, no due process, nothing, right? We're going to keep all this stuff. There are some Republicans who don't want to have it, but they're not the ones in power except for President Trump and Rand Paul, because he has been, again, the focus of this out-of-control government. So it remains to be seen. We'll be watching that, further developments. But you need to know where Barr is coming from. As I've said before, if he wants to, you know, it's necessary. If you want to stab the president in the back, you've got to get behind him first. And I think that's really what Barr has been doing. I have opposed this guy from the very beginning, just like I oppose the appointments of Goldman Sachs bankers and Rex Tillerson, the guy who institutionalized pedophilia, and the Boy Scouts of America destroyed that institution. They had already gone to the Supreme Court and said, we have a right to say that we don't want to have homosexuals serving as scout leaders because we believe that that increases the likelihood of sexual abuse with these minors. You know, they're operating in a camping environment where there's not a lot of supervision. So you want to play the odds. You want to get adults who are not sexually attracted to the sex that they're overseeing. That's why they didn't have male scout leaders for the Girl Scouts, right? And instead, you know, after the Supreme Court said, yeah, you're right, you have the power to do that. So then they put Rex Tillerson in as head of the Boy Scouts. And, you know, that's all just fine. But, of course, these abuses within the Boy Scouts have been going on for decades. It's just now come to light with lawsuits. But they normalized this under Rex Tillerson. They've completely destroyed that institution, and they have completely destroyed the federal government by removing all the checks and balances of the Constitution. Not even recently passed laws have any weight with people like our own Attorney General, William Barr. He doesn't care. Doesn't care. They will defend, however, Hillary Clinton, as you saw earlier this week, defending her against any evidence or any further investigation as Judicial Watch is trying to get that information. The federal judge says no, Hillary's going to testify, but it's Barr defending her. Welcome back. Let's talk about what's going on with the immigrant invasion going into Greece from Turkey. You know, I have this allegedly began over the weekend as an attempt to blackmail the European Union, and I think that is a part of it. I said that from the very beginning. Other people are now saying that as well. Clearly, that was the what Erdogan was trying to do. He's trying to blackmail Europe and NATO to come to their aid against Russia. And they were bragging about how many people they were sending in and so forth. But this has already been building up for quite some time. Back in 2015, we had a massive wave of immigration, if you remember, that went into the European Union uncontrolled. And Viktor Orban, the head of Hungary. I don't know if he's president or prime minister, but he did Hungarian prime minister. The only head of state who's been willing to take any real action to stop the ongoing migrant invasion of Europe, says Voice of Europe, following a routine inspection of Hungary's border fences with his Slovakian counterpart. Orbán said that the Hungarian authorities have started to prepare for an expected increase in the number of organized migrant caravans attempting to enter the country illegally as the weather improves. Now, he said this February the 15th. So we're talking about 3 weeks ago, not 3 days ago, 3 weeks ago. He said they're coming again. He knew it was coming. And I'll tell you why he knew here. During an impromptu press conference, Prime Minister Orbán took the opportunity to express his gratitude for Slovakia's support, saying, "This is hard work, which we would have a hard time doing without help and without our allies." He also took the opportunity to slam the lying international press for broadcasting a grossly distorted image of the ongoing migration crisis, which does not correspond to objective reality, arguing that 95% of newly arrived migrants are military-aged men. They're not families. They're military-aged men. He says, it's forbidden to say so in Europe, but this is an organized invasion. And he pointed out that the Hungarian Secret Service was closely monitoring the situation. They have intelligence that makes it clear that the illegal immigration is being assisted by what he calls half-human trafficking organizations that call themselves NGOs. And we know who's funding that. People like George Soros. And so he knows that this is coming because he's got his intelligence agencies looking at what George Soros and these so-called NGOs are doing. And he also knows that it's an invasion. And that's exactly what Erdogan is doing. And yet you have the New York Post editorial board talking about how this could mean the end of the European Union. Yeah, it's the end of Europe. It's the end of culture. The European culture, the European peoples, they're all being replaced. This is a deliberate policy of these alleged NGOs. The New York Post, however, accepts the lying narrative from Erdogan, saying the fighting has pushed more Syrian civilians towards Turkey. That is not the case. That is the excuse that's being used by Erdogan. That's the propaganda that Erdogan is putting out. Oh, well, we just have all these Syrian refugees. You have to help us to stop the war by coming in on our side and overthrowing Assad in Syria, who is being defended by the Russians. So we want you, NATO, to come in and fight the Russians, overthrow Assad, so we can send these Syrian refugees home. No, no, no. And if you don't, I'm going to send them into Europe. That's not what's going on. These people are, for the most part, Afghans. They're not families. They're not refugees. They're single men of military age. That's what the Greeks said from the very beginning. But now we still have the New York Post coming out March 3rd, yesterday, telling us that these are civilian refugees. No, they're not. No, they're not. MSN.com, a new refugee crisis could break the European Union. Let me tell you something. It's going to bring things to a head. The European Union will break up because people resent the fact that their country is being overrun and that the European Union leadership is acting in collusion with these alleged NGOs to destroy their countries, to replace the population, to replace their culture, to homogenize it with different people who are going to be eagerly accepting European Union rule. As MSN points out, more than a million refugees came in 2015, and they said it's already clear that it is a blowback to the EU's utter failure to reform its migration system in the past 5 years, a failure that leaves it open to blackmail. That's what I said it was, blackmail. Leaves it open to blackmail by cynical autocrats like Turkish President Erdogan, and that's precisely what is happening. Blackmail. Put me in power. You know, ISIS, you know, that was going to be, you know, consolidating power across Iraq and Syria and so forth. Well, he wants to be the one to do that. He wants a caliphate there across Syria, Iran, Iraq, and then he'll move on to the rest of the world. And he wants NATO to help him to establish that regionally. Meanwhile, in Greece, we have the Greek army and the police are digging in on the Turkish borderline. And we have Turkey saying they're getting violent. They've killed a migrant. They've wounded five others. Turkey says, rejects the claim and says, no, we didn't kill anybody. Meanwhile, there is tear gas being fired on both sides of the border. That should tell you something as well. Are these Syrian migrant families? Are they coming here with tear gas, these peaceful migrants? You know, we had reports from the very beginning that the local officials in some of the Greek towns said, at night, we can see the Turkish army soldiers who are cutting the wires on the fences so that these people can get through. This is an invasion. It's being pushed. These people are being pushed in here by the Turkish army. And now we see tear gas is being fired on both sides. Both sides. More evidence that it is the Turkish army and Erdogan's army that is pushing this through. Meanwhile, the EU appears to at least be saying that they're going to come to the defense of Greece. And they, if they do it, it'll only be because they realize that another massive wave of millions of people, which is what they are trying to do, after all the violence that has followed that, it is going to be the end of the EU leadership. People like Angela Merkel are already on their way out. She's already lost her power because she has been the diehard supporter of these policies. And if they continue this, all of these parties, not just in Germany, but all of them will lose power. And you're going to see things like Brexit happening everywhere across Europe. It will be the end of the EU, and it should be the end of the EU. The only question is, will these people have the will and the determination to take their countries back? Well, only time will tell. We'll have to see what happens in France. Once you get these massive numbers of people in, is it too late to get your country back? We don't know. But the EU is now saying, well, we're going to help Greece against Turkey, rather than helping Turkey against Russia. We'll be right back, and we're going to be joined by Del Bigtree. We're going to be talking about vaccines and the risk of the corona vaccine being pushed on us and accelerated. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
American Dream. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Del Bigtree. And of course, Del is closely following vaccines with his program, Highwire. You can find him on Twitter at Highwire Talk. Also, his website, icandecide.org. And I wanted to get him on to talk about the coronavirus vaccines. We've got a lot of people talking about developing this. We've had companies, a couple of different companies here in the U.S. I mean, they're talking about genetic modification, vaccines. You've got the Israelis saying, we're going to have a vaccine ready pretty soon. The other thing that I'm very concerned about is the number of articles that we're seeing out like this one. Want a coronavirus vaccine very fast? Well, here's a solution, says MSN. Let's have a big cash prize. Let's have a race, and the government can fund it to see who can get this done the quickest. Do you see a problem with that? Well, Del Bigtree is going to explain to us what the problem is with that. President Trump is also pushing this. Very concerning what he is doing in terms of going to the pharmaceutical executives, the meeting they have. Let's get this done in a couple of months. And they're saying, well, we'll probably need at least a year. I don't think even that is long enough, considering the kind of history that we have seen them confess at the World Health Organization videos that you've seen. I think Del is joining us now. Del, you put those videos out, didn't you, about the officials of the World Health? Yeah. Talking about, we really do need to do some better testing on this.
Right. And the big conversation was, you know, not just testing, but do we have post-marketing surveillance going on?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Really happening. But let's talk about this coronavirus vaccine, because, you know, what MSM is saying is really what Trump is doing. Trump is basically saying, I want to get $2.5 billion together for a coronavirus vaccine. And it's like a Jeopardy show right now. We're watching everybody hit the buzzer. The question is, do they have the answer or not? I mean, if you have this $2.5 million on the table, you're going to hit that buzzer and say, hey, we've got the coronavirus vaccine here ready to go. But do they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually a billion, isn't it? Isn't it a billion? $2.5 billion.
Billion. Yeah. Did I say million? Billion.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, a million here, billion. In Washington, you know, who's counting, right? But it's a lot of money.
So how do we know we have the smartest people in the room? It's not being made because they care about people or they have a great track record. It's simply whoever can, like, make the most positive statement about a vaccine. And I think the thing that, you know, sort of is interesting here is when you think about coronavirus to begin with, David, you know that we always had that saying, there's no cure for the common cold. Well, the common cold always was the coronavirus. The coronavirus is the common cold. Now, this may be a more extreme strain. We're still trying to figure out what that is. But I find it ironic that since the, you know, since the beginning of vaccines, this is the one thing we haven't really been able to figure out how to make a vaccine for. And now all of a sudden, you know, within, you know, 3 days, I think it was someone in California said, in 3 days, we figured out a coronavirus vaccine. Well, where were you? Where has this been? Why is it suddenly we can do this when we've never been able to do it before? That's question number one. Number two is, you know, David, we've already proved with my nonprofit and lawsuits that we've won against the CDC, National Institute of Health, FDA, the Health and Human Services, that they have never done the placebo studies to prove that any of the vaccines we're giving our children are safe. That's something that is very problematic. We're not using the gold standard to establish safety to begin with vaccines. So we've already rushed this vaccine program onto the market. I think if you look at the health of our kids, this program is failing. We're now at 54% chronic illness in our children, but we've covered all that before. The real question is, can you imagine a vaccine now that's going to move to market even faster than those?
Yes. And, yes, you know, exactly.
We see Tony Fauci says he's excited now that he believes, you know, he says, I'm going to be conservative about this because you have to understand our first study has to be a safety study, but we're going into human trials immediately, he says. And, you know, but you have to understand those safety trials are going to be about 4 to 6 months, but there'll only be about 20 or 40 people in it. If we have success, we don't run into any hiccups, I think is what he said, or you know, snags, which they've been running into for the last 100 years, but suddenly, hopefully, we just green lights all the way on this, then we'll have to go to a larger model, an efficacy study, and that will be about 4 months. He said, so in all reality, best case scenario, we have a vaccine within 12 to 18 months. Now, David, what he is, they are going to do no long-term safety studies. This means if this vaccine causes any sort of autoimmune disease down the road or has some sort of latent death effect, they'll have no way of determining that. And that's not a stretch, by the way, because when we investigated, we did a show last week about this on the High Wire. When we investigated the attempt to make a SARS coronavirus vaccine right after the SARS epidemic, multiple institutions attempted it and all had a similar result. That result was that they used animal testing. And when they gave the vaccine to animals, remember, a coronavirus with SARS, it was a SARS coronavirus, the vaccine worked great. It looked like they had the antibodies. But then when they challenged them with the actual SARS virus, the animals had an overreaction to it, and it killed many of them. All sorts of a cytokine storm, basically a nuclear reaction inside their immune systems. And it happened over and over and over again to the point where these studies reported and warned we should be very careful about going forward with a human trial on this vaccine because it did the opposite of what they wanted. It made it so it made whatever virus the animal came in contact with far more deadly, which is interesting, David. Just one of the speculations that I've been on is, did they test this vaccine on the Chinese population? We know they did on a small group. But what if they tested on everybody? Is that why they're dying in higher numbers in China? This is a question you're not hearing mainstream news ask. But if the animal models showed that the vaccine made them more prone to death from the virus, is it possible they gave a coronavirus vaccine to their population and that's why they're having higher than usual death rates? We're not seeing the same death rates around the world. Just a question. It's just a theory. But we should start asking every question in the book because think about it. Even if it's just a theory and that isn't what happened, we know it's possible, David. We know it's possible to make a vaccine that actually has the opposite effect, ends up making you more prone to death in the future. Now imagine a forced vaccination program like we're seeing. Maine just lost out. They tried to have a referendum to stop that law yesterday. Now Maine has a forced vaccination program. New York, California, Mississippi, West Virginia. They're attempting it in states. Colorado's got a law. Virginia, you know, this is a push by pharma to take away our right to opt out of a vaccine. Now, if we lose that right, say here in Texas next year or in any other states where people are living, now imagine they rush a coronavirus vaccine. They get it done in 12 months. You have a law that says you can't opt out of it, even though you don't think a 4 to 6 month safety trial was enough to decide it was safe. And you know that animal models died when they were came in contact with the virus. We're going to have no way to opt out, David, which means, you know, I'll be honest. Far less concerned about a natural virus, you know, circulating like the cold and my ability and my children's ability to defend themselves. I'm much less worried about that wiping out humanity because it's never happened than I am in politicians making a critical error and forcing us all to use a vaccine that, whoops, oh, accidentally are bad. It actually makes you die when you come in contact with what should have been a common cold.
This I agree. Even if this thing is an engineered bioweapon that was released or escaped, you still have that out there. And now you're going to compound this with an untested vaccine that has already given the kind of results that you're talking about in the past that we've seen. And just remember the history that you and I have talked about so many times. When you look at the fact that they created this vaccine court to protect to give legal immunity to the pharmaceutical companies, you know, to protect them from adverse effects and so forth. And we see that the vast majority of the people who are injured and get some compensation, if they know about that court, are because of flu vaccines. And now we're going to rush to market this particular type of thing. I mean, I'm very concerned about that. Even if this was a placebo and they just use this to establish a legal precedent about how they could mandate vaccines. I mean, there's just so many different angles to this. We got to take a break, and we're going to be right back. Amazing information, Del Bigtree with Highwire. And, of course, you can find him on Twitter at Highwire Talk. Also on website. His website is icandecide.org. Can you decide? Will you be allowed to have informed consent? Will these people do due diligence? Will they allow you to do due diligence if they can force medication on you? You are nothing more than their cattle. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Del Bigtree as this coronavirus panic is exploding. They've just reported on CNBC that L.A. area officials have declared an emergency after confirming 6 new coronavirus cases over the last 48 hours. And I'll just remind you that it was a month ago. Here we are, March the 4th. It was February the 5th. This article from CBS. 5 people sickened in L.A. measles outbreak. Patients visited dozens of West L.A. stores, so we got 34 people. We're going to have to quarantine them, and this all happened because they had one passenger fly into LAX. I mean, it's same exact narrative. They did this with measles. You got to understand where this is headed with the vaccine industry. There's a political dimension to this as well, because we didn't see this kind of response with the H1N1 swine flu vaccine. As a matter of fact, they eventually declared that to be an emergency. I had it. It was just the flu. But they declared it an emergency, but not for 6 months. The Obama administration and the press tamped down any concerns about that, but they are tamping this up. And the real concern, as we look at this, we've had President Trump, and I talked earlier to Alex Newman, talking about interest rates. President Trump has appointed somebody to the Federal Reserve that wants a gold standard. It says, I don't want interest rates manipulated, but he's willing to do that to get elected. And so the question is, what is he willing to do with forced vaccines in order to get elected? He went to a meeting this week, was roundly criticized. He said, 2 months? Can we get this done in 2 months? I said, you don't understand how this works. It's going to take at least a year. And I looked at that and I thought, a year? As you just heard Del Bigtree say, that is not nearly long enough. That's not nearly enough testing. And he just broke recordings from the World Health Organization. We had one scientist after the other say, we're not doing any testing that really matters. We're not doing any long-term testing and so forth. Del, what's your response to this?
Well, look, it is scary. I mean, I think that in many ways, Donald Trump has, you know, been fairly open-minded on this vaccine issue. We know he spoke out against vaccines somewhat, not completely, but when he was campaigning for the job of the president, he was asked about his belief in the connection between vaccines and autism. He says, I believe there is a connection. We're giving too many, too high doses all at one time. I believe in vaccines, but we should spread them out, have lower doses. So we have a president that I think can think clearly on this. So when he says something like, can we get a vaccine in 2 months? I think a lot of us are hoping that he knows that's not the case. And he's just trying to get out in front of what really does appear to be a politicized issue, trying to say that somehow this proved that, you know, his presidency isn't working. He's put us all in danger. The CDC is not prepared. I mean, I remember when the CDC was dealing with the three cases of Ebola, it was like a circus around here. I think the real problem is the CDC doesn't seem to have any clue on how to handle these issues. That's not the president's problem. That's whoever's running the CDC and how things are going on there. But it is clear that this could be a political issue. And sure, he can't see the way, David. I'm not against a vaccine either, as long as it's gone through safety trials against an inert placebo, and that those safety trials lasted long enough that we could see whether or not it causes autoimmune diseases that will not appear for the next 2 to 3 years. So if they want to do a safety study for 3 years against an inert placebo, like a saline injection, and track those groups the way we do on every cancer drug or any other drug we take, then fine. I also believe that even when you create that vaccine, I should still have the ability to opt out of it. But at least I will say you used the scientific method and you did this correctly. If they do any vaccine before that, then I think there should be a giant warning label, was not tested whether it causes autoimmune disease, could end up ruining your life in the future, or maybe even killing you. But if you're so terrified of coronavirus because all you do is listen to the hype on your television, then you can basically use this off-label vaccine before it's finished with its trials. I mean, that's the best that they should do. The idea of racing it is really dangerous. And I want to bring up a point, if you don't mind, David, that we're actually seeing that there may be better approaches anyway than vaccines. They've been using trials right now in China of a drug called chloroquine. It's an antiviral that's very successful in curing malaria. And these trials have been going on. And one of the top viral scientists in the world from one of the biggest disease hospitals in France came out and said these have been so successful in the trials that he said, listen to this. Actually, from all respiratory infections, it's probably the easiest to treat. He's saying that coronavirus is turning out to be really easy to treat if you use this antiviral drug. He also goes on to say there is really no reason to get excited and rush to produce a vaccine. That's coming from one of the, I mean, this guy believes in vaccines. He believes in drugs. But what he's saying is we have a better approach. So go ahead, take your time on the vaccine. We have a drug. And by the way, they're doing high-dose vitamin C trials that look really good.
Exactly. I was going to mention that. There's reports that they've had tons of vitamin C brought in, that people are getting, you know, 12 grams of vitamin C intravenously, and that's basically taking care of it. And, of course, vitamin C intravenously has been used very effectively, as long as Pauling has pointed out, against a wide variety of things. There's safe and natural and proven and tested solutions to handling a respiratory illness like this.
There are, and we should certainly be exhausting those first. I mean, you have to question, you know, really, you see where the money is. We're talking, like we said, $2.5 billion on the table. This is practically a money laundering scheme. I mean, what if we don't need a vaccine? And by the way, they're already showing that this coronavirus is mutating. There's a whole new version out there. There are now two versions. So by the time you get a vaccine, will it even be able to relate to where this is mutated to? So many issues like that. And, you know, no matter
what. Which is
what
we always see with flu vaccines. You know, you never know which flu vaccine. Sorry, go ahead.
Some of the greatest mistakes ever made in world history. Let's not make that mistake. Let's take our time. You know, we will survive this. We already know there's ways to deal with it. Let's take our time on vaccines, and let's take the fear out of this and really look at the real numbers.
That's my concern, is the fear and the weaponization and the politicization of this. We've already seen massive economic effects, and those are real. And now we're told that even though the CDC didn't have any testing kits, or the testing kits they put out were giving false positives, false negatives, and so forth, they were junk. But now we're told they've got it all fixed, Dell, and they're going to be releasing these by the millions the end of this week. And I think that they're going to be rounding people up rightfully and wrongfully and putting them in quarantine. That's the next step. You put the test kit out there, now it's like, okay, straight to quarantine. Once they get you in quarantine, then they can use you as guinea pigs for these vaccines.
Well, and think about this, David. I mean, we know that there is no, I mean, the test has been terrible. It's a terrible test, really inaccurate. But a really great test would be one that's like, let's say 99% accurate. Now imagine you test all of America, right? Let's just use that number. Let's say they have a great test. It's 99% accurate. If you test all 330 million Americans and you're only 1% off, you're going to have 30 million positives that are incorrect. And what are we going to quarantine those 30 million? And we're going to say, oh my God, just if it's off by 1%. So right there, you have to say, you see how these numbers can get skewed really fast? It's going to be very, very easy to make everybody terrified. They can manipulate these numbers any way they want. You know what we really, and by the way, we don't know what the numbers are. We know that children aren't being affected in China. We probably have kids all across America that have coronavirus and don't even know it. You know, I have a slight nasal congestion today. Maybe I have coronavirus. I'm not going to the hospital. So the death rate is even going to look much higher than it really is. They're saying it's about a 2-3% death rate. But how many people that just thought they had a cold stayed home? They didn't go to the doctor. So we're not bringing down the death rate by actually knowing how many people, because they are saying, David, that between 80-90% of people have very little symptoms at all. So if we knew who all those people were that just thought, oh, I had the sniffles for a few days, then we would see that death rate would probably plummet from 2-3% down to 0.0 something. But they won't do that. They won't do that because they have to sell vaccines. And what you talked about, even more scary, they have to sell the idea that we should lock ourselves in prison, in our own homes. They're doing it in China. Italy is terrified. They're using this, I think, at the very least, to test, will we imprison ourselves? Will we contain ourselves? Will we quarantine ourselves over fear? I mean, even at my own school, we just got a list. Don't let the kids hug. No more handshaking. They shouldn't touch. They're going to wash their hands, you know, 25 times a day. I mean, there's maybe some
We're going to rub elbows and we're going to tap feet and we're going to shave our beards. You and I are not going to shave our beards.
For how long?
But they're getting everybody
for
so freaked out.
Are we just
going to
end human contact? Yeah. I mean, it's like living in a science fiction novel.
Exactly. Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Did we lose Dell? Well, we got it coming up to the break and the end of the show anyway. I think we've lost Dell. Thank you so much for joining us again. Dell Bigtree, you can find his website, icandecide.org. I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to decide. You want to protect yourself, protect your family, take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what we're dependent on in order to be on the air. And we've got a lot of products that will help you to boost your immune system, to boost your health. Make sure you got sufficient vitamins, minerals, and so forth that you have prepped with that. Make sure you've prepped with food. This is really getting out of hand. I'm far more concerned about government and pharmaceutical reactions to this than I am about the virus itself.